I don't ever want to have that feeling or the stress that my wife and I had. And the only way to guarantee that is cash flow, because we can't control the markets or appreciation or depreciation, but we can control cash flow.
If you're interested in how highly successful investors overcome limitations and become unstoppable forces of success, you're in the right place. The Conscious Investor Podcast features weekly conversations with real estate investing experts and delivers a Monday mindset episode to help launch your week with intention. If you believe success is for everyone willing to think, then do, these conversations will be your weekly rocket fuel. Conscious investors, welcome back to another amazing episode. And I'm so excited that you are here. You have so many episodes, so many podcasts to choose from, and yet you come back to the Conscious Investor Podcast. And I just want you to know that that just is absolutely amazing and exciting. And it's really a true testament to the type of people that we have on the show. And so I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you, because I have been producing, creating this show for over 300 yes episodes because I want to support you. And so I just want to say thank you for showing the love back. If you have not already left a rating or review, an honest one, maybe you love it. Maybe you're like, I don't know. Just leave an honest rating and review because that helps this podcast reach more people. And think about this. What would happen if you didn't discover this podcast or the other five podcasts that you absolutely love? So make sure with all the podcasts that you are enjoying to go rate and review them. It takes just a moment to do, and it makes a huge difference, if only to boost the morale of the podcast host to say, people are listening and they're enjoying, or wow, maybe I should improve this area. Okay. So keep being awesome, conscious investors. And we have another amazing and extraordinary guest. In fact, we're kind of at the same lateral level in America, because our guest today is from Wisconsin. So that's pretty cool. Derek, thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Conscious Investor.
Well, thank you, Julie. I don't know about this reviews. We'll see how today goes. I might not get the best reviews, but I'll give it my best shot.
Best shot? Okay. All right. So he's asking for it, y'all. So make sure it's really super honest. Hey, Derek, you and I have something in common. We've spent decades within the real estate world, and that's really interesting. And while you work with investors really on the active side, and you know that we support passive investors on the podcast primarily, I know that the insight that comes from having decades of experience is something that will support everybody. So before we make any assumptions, maybe we should just like make you prove yourself a little bit. We're gonna put you in the hot seat. Tell us a little bit about your experience within the real estate, just so people understand how diverse it is. And I was trailing on there and I didn't mean to trail on. No, please.
No. And we actually do support a lot of passive investors. Get to that later on as far as how we operate our lending company today, because it is 100% supported by passive investors. But the background, my wife, Tracy, and I started in 2003. And just like most people, we went and bought a property. Actually, we bought several properties within the first month that we were jumped in. I don't really do anything halfway. I'm one of those personality types. I'll learn it as I go, which can be super expensive, but we take action. And I came from a construction background, grew up in a small town in the middle of Wisconsin, and was born and raised in a house with work ethic and you do your job to the best of your ability and then some. So we didn't know any different. We just started buying and fixing and buying and fixing and turning the profits over and growing a portfolio. For the first 3 years, we grew a portfolio up to about $4 million in value back in the early 2000s, and it was about 29 doors total. And then 2007 hit. Our portfolio was split between Wisconsin and we had some properties in Florida. And the Florida stuff buried us. It really did. We didn't know any different than to use bank financing. My wife and I had good jobs. We had great credit, but lenders were throwing money at us. Why would we not do that? We thought we were geniuses, God's gift to real estate investing, when in reality, we didn't know much at all. And we quickly learned that we had zero control over our business. The banks had all the control. And to this day, lenders in any deal, whether it's a private lender or a bank, typically have the most control over the deal. So it was painful. At the same time, I shared this with you before we started talking, but my wife and I also, while we were losing damn near everything we had, we were trying to grow a family and we weren't able to do it naturally. So that involved a lot of medical expenses and ultimately led to some adoptions. And all of this happening while the biological clock is ticking and the checkbook is empty and there's not a bank in the world that'll touch you. The first time I ever used private money was to pay for the adoption of my son from China, because we had started the process previous to our financial turmoil and accepted the match. And there's no way I was not going to bring that boy home. So that was the first time that I ever approached a private individual to borrow money, and well worth it. So once we got through all of that, we had to do something different or quit. And we don't believe in quitting. So learning how to buy creatively, how to structure deals creatively. And ultimately, when I met my current business partner around late 2012, it was an eye-opening experience for me, because Jeff had never used a bank. He started about a year or two after I had, but had never used a bank to fund any real estate transaction. I just couldn't understand how that was possible. So he had just raised private money or bought creatively, but primarily raised private money. And we became fast friends. And several months later, we started our first company together. And I remember him telling me this, because back in the early 2000s, you would hear the sales pitch from gurus to go buy single families or small multifamilies, get to 100 doors that each cash flow $100 per door. You're going to make $10,000 a month and you're going to live the good life. I still hear that same pitch today with the exact same dollar amounts, which is a little ironic given the fact that $10,000 a month isn't very much anymore, but they're still selling that same dream, right? When I met Jeff and he told me, Derek, he said, would you rather manage 100 rental units or 100 loans? And how long does it take to manage 100 rental units? It's a full-time job. How long does it take to manage 100 loans? An hour or two a week, maybe. And you don't have the tenants and toilets, the maintenance. You also don't have appreciation. You don't have some tax benefits. So there's pluses and minuses to both. It was just that shift in my mentality. So Jeff and I, we were flipping houses, rental properties, all that kind of stuff. And we were raising private capital for all of our deals. And we got to a point where we were raising more money than we could keep busy in our own deals. And we didn't want our investors to go somewhere else. So that's when we started lending. Jeff had dabbled in it prior to me meeting him. So he had a background in it. But everything that we've done from that point to today, and we've had some pretty incredible growth, is 100% privately funded. So we don't have any institutional money backing us at this point, nor do we want it. And it's great. We've been able to take a lot of mom and pop investors, especially early on, that were getting next to nothing returns in a bank CD or some terrible money market account, and give them a safe, secure 9% return on their money secured by real estate. And it's an arbitrage business. We pay 9, we lend it at 12 or 13. The brief version of the last 19 years, Julie.
That is definitely the like condensed Cliff's Notes version. I don't even know if kids these days still have Cliff's Notes, but
I don't think so.
There are all sorts of ways you can get books that are condensed like that, but I appreciate that. And what's really interesting is that this is another form of passive investing every time. And I didn't want to interrupt you, but for you listeners, every time you're hearing him say, oh, we brought in this money from private investors, like those are passive investors. They're saying, hey, just take my money, grow my money. I like real estate. I believe in what this is going to do and the returns and the security of this. So when you think about those passive investors that are attracted into that, what are some things that, or what are some of the hurdles that you've had to walk those investors through?
Some of our investors had zero experience in real estate at all. So they need a little more handholding as far as what's the process, what's our security, what happens if borrower defaults, that type of stuff. Other investors of ours were lenders themselves before, and they liked the lending space until they had a loan go bad. And they looked at us and said, well, I could charge 10, 11, 12%, or I could get 9% for doing nothing versus having to deal with the stress. The other thing is for us explaining to our clients, our investors, if they invest in our fund, their money is spread out over all the loans within the portfolio that are funded by that fund. So if we have a loan that goes bad, all their money's not tied up in one asset. Mm-hmm. If they're out lending on their own, and one goes bad, they're in for the ride as long as it takes. And we've been very fortunate. Jeff and I spend a lot of time throughout our region educating. We speak a lot. We're heavily involved in all of the RIA associations. There's 8 major ones in the state of Wisconsin. We are sponsors and speakers at every single one of them. So our default rate has been extremely low because we're training our borrowers before they ever borrow money from us, for the most part. To date, since 2012, we've taken back 9 properties, and we average 20 plus loans a month. I will say this too, Julie, from a passive standpoint, we don't want our investors to ever leave us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we tell them, you can have your money back when you're dead and it goes to your heirs. And we're joking, of course, but we want to keep them so happy and safe and secure that they have no reason to ever want to pull it out and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And we've got a great track record of that.
I love that. I absolutely love that. When you're looking at the real estate market as it's shifting, we can see it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're part owners in a RE/MAX brokerage in our town. I mean, although I'm not in residential sales, that's my husband's gig. And so I know what's going on and I'm watching it. So yeah. Anyhow, as we're watching real estate shift, the stock market shift, the global economy, all these things, nobody has a crystal ball. But what are some of the things that you guys are being aware of, and what are some considerations that you're preparing your passive investors for?
Well, the first thing, I'm like a kid in a candy store right now because we still actively buy and sell. I just came back from a property an hour ago that we're closing on in 2 weeks. So we're trying to buy 2 to 3 properties a month. But for me, the shift is going to be really good for about 5% of us, and 95% who have the blinders on and think, not that 2007 is going to happen again the way it happened, but there certainly is going to be a change in the market. There's always changes. There's always cycles. Mm-hmm. Specifically from the lender standpoint and how we talk with our investors, when somebody comes on board with us, one of the conversations we have before their money comes into our fund is, what's our worst case scenario? Mm-hmm. Well, if we all of a sudden get a rash of defaults and the values aren't there to liquidate them and be made whole, we'll shift it into just holding them and mm-hmm. rent them out and cash flow them. And our investors have all agreed that although that wouldn't be the ideal scenario, yeah, they don't need to get their money back immediately, meaning they're getting 9%. If we can cash flow these properties, maybe they have to go to 7 or 8% return, but we can ride it out because we run a full-time acquisition company and we run a management company of our own rentals. It's not hard, where a lot of lenders are scared to death of taking a property back because they're only lenders. For us, mm-hmm. it just goes from one business to the other business mm-hmm. and everything's already in place. So our investors have that backstop or that plan B already right. in place ahead of time. And it's another level of security. It's why they like doing business with us.
That's really cool. Yeah, I see. I always say there's never a bad time to buy real estate. Mm-mm. And I had to learn that lesson the hard way through leading into, I mean, think about 04, 05, 06, all of, I mean, just the markets were crazy. I was living in California at the time in residential real estate sales. And it's like, golly, how can these get any higher? How can they go any higher? And I thought I would never buy right now. I'd never buy. And yet I didn't know anything about investing, like true investing at that time. I was watching some investors and I'm like, gosh, they're still buying. They're buying and doing stuff and they're making money. I did notice that. And then when the market tanked, they were still buying and making money and doing whatever it was that they did mm-hmm. with investments, because everyone does something different. Maybe it's a flip, maybe it's a fix and hold, buy and hold situation. Whatever it is, the true investors that I saw that I can look back on over the last many years is they just bought right every single time, regardless of what the market was.
Being from the Midwest, I mean, we can still buy cash flow. A lot of markets can't. I learned the hard way in 2007, our properties in the Midwest cash flowed. They always cash flowed. The stuff in Florida was more of a play on appreciation doesn't pay the bills.
Yep.
Equity doesn't pay the bills. So I will never buy a property, and I'll go on record on the conscious investor. I will never buy a property that doesn't cash flow. My offers are always based on worst case scenario. I need to cash flow or break even, or I don't do the deal. And I've had to pass up on a lot of deals over the years But once you go through the shit show that we went through, sorry if I shouldn't say that, but it's just what it was. You never want to go back to that again, ever. Yep. I don't ever want to have that feeling or the stress that my wife and I had. And the only way to guarantee that is cash flow, because we can't control the markets or appreciation or depreciation, but we can control cash flow.
Yeah, that's so true. Some people are considering, I look at rents and what rents are going to do. And I mean, you guys have that in-house as part of your company, property management. So when you look at where rents are today, I have my own personal projections, and I see some colleagues in the apartment space and they're bumping those rents up. And I'm like, I don't know if you should be bumping those rents up quite so much. What's your opinion on that?
There's only so much money available to people that have jobs. And at a certain threshold, what's the old saying? Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. I don't see trying to maximize. Maybe that's a Midwest saying.
I think it is a Midwest saying, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're welcome. You can use that one. But
I love it, but I can relate to that because we actually have raised pigs. These little suburbanites have raised pigs. And I'm like, that's what happens. You're right.
The point would be, if you try and maximize and squeak every dime out of every deal, whether it's a flip or a rental or whatever, that's only going to take you so far. And usually there's some negative ramifications to it at the end. Now, we keep our rents at a decent market rent, and we keep our properties in very good condition so we can get a higher rent. But I don't want to take advantage of people to the degree where I'm price gouging. Most of the properties that we do lease out, I'm leasing them with an option to purchase. So I do that because, number one, I don't like the management side of rentals. And if I put a tenant buyer into it on a lease option, there's less management involved. They have to maintain the property as if they own it. That's agreed upon within our documents. So my whole life now is built around a vision for time with my family, and taking phone calls from tenants midnight or Sundays is not part of my vision. And if I was maximizing the rents and I was trying to squeak every penny out of every deal, I would have more turnover. I'd have to deal with that more often. So I can make a good living being fair.
Putting that type of burden and stress on people, when we had our own assets and everything, and we were never, I mean, we could have made maybe $50, $75 more or something on a rent. But it's like, I always found the sweet spot where I'm like, I don't want to be the top person. I don't want to gouge because I want people to afford it. At the same time, I don't want to be the lowest person because in reality, when we're looking at a whole pool of people and who's going to be attracted to that, there was a certain caliber of resident that I was looking for profile wise. And I'm like, okay, let me hit the top, but I'm not going to go to the bottom. I'm just going to be in that like sweet, just above the medium midpoint. And it always worked out super well.
And profiling works. I mean, it's called profiling for a reason. You're not wrong. We're not discriminating against any person or classification, but you're right. If you're in this sweet spot, it's like having a median priced home. Mm-hmm. Right now, the people I know that are like, I run 3 national mastermind groups and people are from all over the country, right? And I have some people from your area and we all talk. That's what we do. We collaborate, we help each other. Some of them were building higher end homes in the Northwest, and now they're taking huge price reductions to try and liquidate, and they're nervous. They're sweating. I have other people that are from Georgia and North Carolina in those parts of the country where all they've ever dealt with is median price point. Their properties are still flying off the shelf. They're gone in a matter of days. So I think a lot of people get these stars in their eyes about these bigger numbers. And gosh, if I build a $1 million house instead of a $500,000 house, I can make this much more. Mm-hmm. That is true as long as the markets are stable and climbing. But honestly, Julie, we haven't had that big of a shift in the market. I mean, interest rates today, for anybody younger than 30, they're freaking out because they've never seen an interest rate higher than 5%. But, and you're probably 29, so you wouldn't either. But for the rest of us old people, this is normal, right? Like my first investment was in 2003, I think it was almost 9% bank financing.
I think my first loan was 8.25%, something like that in 2001, 2002, right? It's like,
yeah. And we still made money. The argument from the other side of this conversation would be, well, yeah, but prices weren't as high. Neither were rents. Neither were a lot of things. So it's all in how you buy. and how you cash flow. I will say our lending company, we've seen a hit in the last 2 months on our applications from people that would come to us for bridge financing because we're a short-term lender. So they want to buy a fixer-upper rental and then stabilize it and then go get bank financing. Many of them did not account for a 3% interest increase in their cash flow analysis. So now they're freaking out. Well, I'm sorry, but if you think that interest rates are going to be the same for the duration of the time you own that property, you're nuts. You have to account for these shifts, but many people have not. And that's what's probably causing the most problem.
I agree with that, especially in the apartment space where you have people that weren't projecting. Definitely, that is mirrored. In the syndication space, we're seeing something very similar where there is that bridge financing. In fact, I'm passively invested in a complex and, well, I'll tell you, before June, they were thinking of exiting and selling the asset. Now it's maybe we're going to refinance it. We're going to hold it. They're looking at different plays at this point. And so it's interesting, but taking into account all the numbers and looking ahead to say, what's the worst case scenario? And that's why for us, when we're talking with speaking with passive investors, it's these are some metrics you need to look at. What's the cap rate when they're exiting? Are they even raising it? Or are they thinking it's going to stay low? Are they looking at all the metrics is so key.
Well, I had a conversation this morning with a gentleman that does a lot of syndication and is, I think they just closed on 400 units in the last couple months and they've been buying. And we were talking about cap rates and I'm not a fan of cap rates and I usually don't get into banter back and forth about them, but people were buying at a 4 cap and with 3 to 5 year financing in place and never accounted for the fact that 5 years from now, when they have to refinance, interest rates would be higher than they are. How can you do that? That just blows my mind. I think there's going to be a rash of probably about 3 years to 4 years from today. There's going to be a rash of these apartment complexes going on the market cheap because those loans are all going to come due and rates could be 9-10% by that time. Who knows? Just another opportunity.
I will speculate. I will go on record that I'm speculating even sooner than 3 to 4 years out because there's people had these 3 to 5 years plans in place. So 2017, 2018, 2019, right? We just look at it. And the people right now, especially the people that purchased in the last year and a half or two that had more short-term financing in place, they're coming due. And if they didn't account for that, it's a hot seat moment.
It is. And I saw a lot of that in 2008 and 9 and even 10. Mm-hmm. A lot of commercial loans that were coming due from all of the commercial building in 2004, 5, and 6. And then the banking industry was in turmoil. So people had cash flowing properties that banks refused to refinance, not because the banks didn't want to, their regulators wouldn't let them. And a lot of people don't really know how the banking industry works, but they all have a credit report just like we have a credit report. And if they're too heavy in one asset class or they have too many non-performing assets on their books, they can't refinance. Somebody I had met had owned, I think, 7 hotels at the time, and they were all coming due. And the banks, I mean, he was 50% loan to value, and the banks would not rewrite his debt. He ended up salvaging everything, but I don't know how. But I just remember him telling me, I'm 50% LTV and cash flowing, and they won't refinance. But it had nothing to do with him.
Incredible. Gosh, I love the conversation. I think you and I could just talk real estate because I think that we both love real estate so much. But you have some other really great things. You're like writing a book, you're co-authoring a book, you've got a mastermind. I mean, you're kind of all over the place, like all in real estate in every capacity. So tell us a little bit about the book that you're writing, about your mastermind and how people can reach you.
Yeah, for sure. So the book I'm authoring myself is specifically about private lending, start to finish. From the time you get an application through underwriting, through closing and servicing afterwards. And because there's honestly not a lot of information out there for anybody that wants to get into the private lending space. And I don't have it titled yet. I'm working with a ghostwriter to produce this. The goal is to be published by around December 1st. And I'd love to be able to give that away to your audience for free, the e-version of it. Give everybody my contact information in a little bit. The second book I'm co-authoring with a bunch of other really cool authors is a collaboration of people primarily in real estate, but there's other authors as well. And being published by a gentleman named Kyle Wilson. And Kyle Wilson was Jim Rohn's business partner, if you've ever heard of Jim Rohn.
Yep.
So I'm honored to get to work with Kyle, and I've been learning a lot. So both of those books I want to give away for nothing, the e-version. That book should also be out at the end of the year. So nice. People can shoot me an email and say, hey, I heard you on The Conscious Investor, or I heard you on Julie's show. Put me on the list for the book. And as soon as it's published, we'll ship it out, or we'll hit send and send the e-version. So my name or my email address is my first name, Derek, at my...
With a K. Let's spell it out. We'll have this. We'll have this in the show notes as well. But if you don't mind, let's spell it out.
I'll spell it out. My mom gave me the short version of Derek because she probably thought I'd be too dumb to spell the long version. So it's Derek at bestreifunding.com, which is our lending company. And I check my own emails. My assistant also keeps an eye on them. So as soon as we see them come in, we'll add them to the list. And if any of your listeners have questions or just want to chat, I'm not always available, but I just got off the phone with somebody from Massachusetts that heard me on a different podcast, kind of walked him through a challenge he was having for a few minutes. I love doing that kind of stuff. The more creative, the better. If you call me and ask me about marketing, probably be a short conversation. If you call me and we're talking about deal structuring or lending, it could get pretty long. So shoot me an email. The other thing that we have, I didn't really tell Julie much about this. We do host 3 national masterminds at this point, but that all came about because we have a conference, an annual conference. And the next one is going to be in February of 2023 in Cancun, Mexico. It's called the Generations of Wealth for a couple different reasons. We took over a conference that our friends had run for 8 years. It had a different name and they didn't want us to keep the name, but there was them passing their knowledge down to the next generation. And that's why we wanted to be called that. It's an advanced strategies conference and heavily focused on networking. So our speakers are speaking from 9 until 1. It's a 5-day conference, 9 until 1. Nobody's pitching from the stage. It's not allowed. It's not that kind of deal. And then from 1 o'clock until dinner time, everybody's just hanging out and networking and whatever you want to do by the pool, booze cruise, whatever you want to do. In the evenings, we come back for town hall sessions, which are more interactive. And the thing I'm most proud of, Julie, is we encourage people to bring their kids, and there's no charge for the kids to sit in on the conference. Last February, we had 18 kids there. I mean, we prefer 10 and older just because they can comprehend more stuff. But we had 18 kids there, and about a dozen of them sat in on every lecture. Not that they're going to understand advanced real estate strategies, but they're building a network in their teenage years of other kids from across the country who have parents that are freaks like us that don't conform to normal society ideas that they're taught in school. So my children have, I mean, friends from at least half a dozen different states, and they all have something in common versus the kids they know at school. So it's not for kids. I mean, the conference is for advanced strategies, but we really want people, if they want to bring their kids. So Generations of Wealth, which is GOWvoyage.com. And we'd love to have some of your listeners there.
That is amazing. I got chills because we take our kids not to every single event. And sometimes I go to events solo just because by nature of going to so many events, you've got stuff going on. But our kids, when I was speaking at a conference in Dallas in June, and the kids came along, and they were a couple other kids there. And at that one, they were there more to play and recreate, quite frankly. So they were not sitting in on the sessions except for when mom was speaking. And so they came in for a couple of pops. But all that to say, I ended up having a really great conversation and started creating a network of other people who were like-minded, where what about our kids? Because they're very much fish out of water, where actually very much like most investors are, where's the community? That's why we have these mastermind groups, because we want to bring around some like-minded people, because not everyone thinks like this. So to give the kids a space to be exactly like you said, I'm just echoing you. We have a little echo chamber here where it's like, okay, well, my parents aren't the only nut jobs out there. Like, wow, your parents are like that too. And yours are. It's a little bit reassuring. And then from my background as a public school teacher is also, you're also building their schema, which is really important. And even if they don't understand it, why do we expose little babies and young toddlers to so many experiences and textures and scents? And because they're just creating all of the neural pathways for a greater understanding. So I know my kids might not understand things that we've been teaching them for so many years. Right now, they can't articulate it, but we are weaving something into the fabric of who they are that will set them ahead. The moment the light bulb will come on, and they will be able to activate it, and it will be very exciting.
We don't want to push our kids into our business if they don't want it. But the fact that they know and can see what we do, like I had mentioned to you before the show, we spent 6 weeks on the road this summer in our travel trailer, our fifth wheel, traveling across the country. We did that with another family from Georgia that has four kids. And last summer, when we came out to your part of the country, we were traveling with that same family, as well as two other real estate families, crossing the country for weeks on end. And it was so easy. I mean, like our kids all get along. Everybody has the same mindset. We actually host an event in the summers called RV RIA, where we pick an RV resort somewhere in the country, and whoever can come just comes and hangs out for a week. So last year was South Dakota. This year was Kentucky. And next year, I'm not sure, but it's for that same reason. It's more time for these families to get together, build that relationship. And allegedly, my 15-year-old, soon to be 16-year-old daughter is already engaged to a young lad from Colorado. But I don't know that that's ever going to come to culmination. But it's another young kid that we see at all these events, and he's a very, very nice young man. He still can't have my daughter, but he's a very nice young man.
Oh, that's so funny. To your point with the kids, exactly. My son wants to go into, I think right now he wants to be a Marine. That's been pretty consistent for a while, but he has his plan. He's like, well, I'm going to go to the Marine. He wants to go to college. That's fine. If you like, you need to make your own life. But his end goal was, and then I'm going to be an investor. And I keep reminding him, just remember, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but just remember, you can start as an investor. You don't have to end there. In fact, just make that your starting position.
It can be a little dangerous, Julie. We came back from Generations of Wealth, and my friends from Georgia have two daughters. One is currently 19, the other one is 16. And between the two of them, they now own five houses, which are short-term vacation rentals. So McKenna, my daughter, comes back from Generations of Wealth and she's 15 and she says, Dad, I want to start buying houses. And I said, well, that's fantastic. But until you have your driver's license, I'm not chasing you all over the area, and neither is mom. So you have to have your driver's license. But I said, let's start in doing some passive investing. She can do some lending. She can do things like that that aren't going to take away from her time as a teenager, because I still want her to enjoy her high school years and all the other stuff. Yep. Don't get bogged down in having to run a rehab project or things like that. But it's amazing how their minds shift to this. And 2 weeks before our conference, McKenna approached me and said, Dad, can I do a presentation at the conference? And I was floored. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. What do you want to do it on? She had already built the PowerPoint on her school tablet, and it was titled How to Get Your Kids Involved in Your Business. And she did a 20-minute PowerPoint in front of a room full of her peers and, well, my peers. And her voice never cracked. She never used the word or ah. She hit every point she wanted to make for 20 minutes straight. And I mean, I teared up and it was amazing and got a standing ovation from a room full of multimillionaires. That was a good day. So,
yeah. I mean, when we can see the output of everything, that's the moment of like, oh, this is awesome.
For sure.
Awesome along the way, but there aren't many times when we actually get to see the results tangibly like that. That is amazing. Gosh, Derek, thank you so much for coming on The Conscious Investor. This has been a great conversation and I appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate it. And your listeners better give me a damn good review.
Well, they will, but they're not going to do it for you. They're going to do it for your daughter.
That's impressive. Fine. That's who deserves it anyways, for sure.
So in the reviews, y'all, just go in there, rate it however you want to rate it, and just say your daughter is amazing.
That'd be awesome. Really appreciate you having me on, Julie. It's been truly my pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Derek. To all of you amazing conscious investors, please remember adventure belongs on the trail, not in your investing. So that means not in your personal and professional development and not in your finances. So if you need support with high performance coaching for transforming your life and expanding, make sure you schedule a strategy session with me. If you are looking to grow your finances through passive investing in apartments, make sure you hop on the calendar for a discovery call so we can grow your investment portfolio. Okay, don't be afraid to take the next step. Just take the next step and see where it leads. Until next time, live big, love bigger. What's the big deal about investing in apartments? Why is it better than investing in a slew of single family homes? I've compiled a lot of information on why investing in a multifamily, also known as apartments, will help you reach your investment goals. Head over to 3keysinvestments.com and download the Why Invest in Multifamily guide today.